We continue on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph at the Mishnah. This Mishnah actually, well, the second half of the Mishnah was mentioned on Samach Amud Beis, and we'll end up noticing a potential contradiction in Rashi's comment over there as opposed to Rashi's comment in this parish of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah begins as follows: Hamitaher yeno shel ovid kochavim v'nosno birushuso bebayis hapasuach lirushus arabim beir sheyesh bo of. Let's stop there. So there's a Jew who was using the grapes belonging to an ovid kochavim to make wine. So he was doing it in tahara, and it was going to be fine. He was leaving it in the possession of the idolater, which then leaves it open to potential yayin nesach issues, because if it's at the idolater's home, he may end up touching it. However, the home opened to the public domain in the sense that people would be able to see inside the vat, and perhaps that could serve as a deterrent for the Ovid Kochavim from touching the wine. So is that enough of a deterrent or not? So the Mishnah says, Be'ir sheyesh ba ovdei kochavim yisraelim mutter. In a city where both non-idolaters and Jews live, then it's fine, because as long as there are Jews walking the streets, they'll be able to see into the home, and they'll see the vat, which is there, not a problem. Be'ir shekula ovdei kochavim aser, but in a city where everyone are idolaters, then it would be prohibited because he has nothing to fear. The only fear he has is for other Jews that are around who will see him touching the wine, but if there's other idolaters, it won't make a difference to him. Now, obviously, if the Pesach, the home, is open to the Rishus HaRabim, and you can see inside, we must be talking about where the vat is visible, because if the vat is downstairs in the basement, then who cares if the home is open to Rishus HaRabim? They can see what's happening in the basement. Obviously, it has to be visible from the door, from the entrance to the house. Okay, so that is the Mishnah says, if the city was only populated by idolaters, it would be prohibited. Because in other words, we're going to assume then that the Ovid Kochavim, the owner of the home, will be touching the wine. Ad sheyeshev u'mishamer, until he has a shomer, either himself or somebody is there watching the wine. Ve'ein hashomer tzarech lios yoshev u'mishamer, af apiyotzi shehu yotzi v'nichnas muter. The shomer doesn't have to be a mashkiach tamidi. He doesn't have to be there all the time. As long as he goes in and out at different times and unannounced, then that would be enough to declare the wine tahor, and that would be enough of a fear for the idolater to touch the wine. Tosos on the next page is bothered by this idea of this shomer. He says, I don't understand. What difference does it make whether there's a shomer or when Yisrael and Ovdei Kochavim are living there at the same time? We said before that it's fine because there's somebody that's around. So if you're telling me on the second case, if there's a shomer, then it's fine, you're not saying anything. You're essentially repeating the earlier case. That turns it into a situation when there are Yisraelim and Ovdei Kochavim around. So what does the shomer change it? So the difference is, Tosus explains, that the shomer is one person. The previous case was where there are multiple Yisraelim and multiple Ovdei Kochavim. Here, it's just multiple Ovdei Kochavim and one shomer, that's enough. You don't need to have more than one. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar argues on the Tanna Kamma, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, Rishus Ovdei Kochavim achas hi. The domain of the idolaters is one. What the heck does that mean? So Rashi says the Gemara is going to explain. The Gemara is going to explain whether Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is trying to argue on the Tanna Kamma to be more strict or to be more lenient. In other words, when the city is all Ovid Kochavim and it's Usser, is Rabbi Shimon also saying that we can be lenient, or he's saying we can be machmir even in another case? We can be even more machmir. So that's for later, we'll get there. Now the next Mishnah continues. One other important point we have to mention here is that all these discussions of having the wine in the domain of the idolaters, in the domain of the idolater, the assumption is, at least when you read the Mishnah, that the wine is easily accessible in the sense that he can easily open it and touch it. There's no seal. It's not locked. So it sounds like, and this is what Rashi says here, that so long as the vat is in the public view, because the opening of the home where the vat is located juts right out into the public domain, then it would be permissible to drink the wine in a community where there are multiple Jews around, or there's a shomer there, even if the vat wasn't locked, even if the Ovid Kachavim has unfettered access. There's still enough fear that he wouldn't do it. Okay, that's part number one. But obviously, the implication would be that in a different situation, if it wouldn't be open to Rishus HaRavim, it sounds like that if the doors, if the vat would be locked, then it would still be permissible. Because even though the idolater wouldn't be afraid to touch the wine, if he didn't have access to get into the wine, then it should be permissible. That seems to be the implication. We'll get there in a second with that earlier Rashi, which I mentioned before. So now the next Mishnah begins as follows. Hametaher yeno shel oved kochavim v'nosno birushuso. If a person wanted to, again, make wine with the grapes of an idolater, and he leaves the wine in the reshus, in the domain of the idolater, v'hala kosilo hiskabalti mimchamos, and the Oved Kochavim writes a star saying, I have already received your money, even though he didn't receive it yet, he's only going to get the money. The Jew is only going to give the money after he sells the wine, then I'll pay him back for it, but he wrote it anyways. Mutter. We say at that point, we're not concerned that the idolater is going to touch the wine. Why are we not concerned? The assumption is that since he's already said that the money is, I've already received the money, so he has a debt right now, so he's not going to ruin the wine in order to potentially lose out on all that money that he agreed to, because he already said, he's Kabbalti, I already received it. So the Jew could walk out and say, I don't owe you any money. So there's no incentive for him to ruin the wine. However, Aval Imirta Yisrael Lahotzi Ve'enu Menichu Achitin Lo Asma Osav. But what if the Yisrael wants to take out the vat from the house, but the owner is not allowing him until he gets the money? Zehai Maisa Be'eshan Ve'asru. That was a story that occurred in Be'eshan, and they prohibited it because at that point he says that he doesn't care, because when if he's gonna hold on to the wine and he'll keep it as his if he's not gonna get the money, and then in that case we're gonna be more machmir. Now what's interesting in this part of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah doesn't specify where this took place. It doesn't specify whether this only applies in a public domain. In other words, it says simply that you use the wine, or the grapes of the Chacham, to make wine, you're leaving in his domain, and he wrote a letter to Yashtar saying, I've already received the money from the Yisrael. And mutter, it's permissible. What about the fact that the wine is there, and maybe he's going to touch it anyways? Well, does it matter if it's in a public domain or near a public domain or not? So Rashi over here seems to say, in bias pasuach l'rishus harabim, obviously it has to follow all of the stipulations in the earlier Mishnah, which is that it has to be open to a public domain. If it's open to the public domain, then it's everything would follow. But if it's not open to the public domain, it would be prohibited. What about the keys? No mention here about keys either. The idea of a keys is going to be mentioned on the bottom of this daf going to the next page. What about keys? So it sounds like that if there were keys, then it would be permissible because it was locked up. In other words, you need one thing or the other. Either you need to have the key, meaning either you need to have the vat locked, or you need to have the vat placed in a public area. Obviously, if you have both, that's even better. But here, it sounds like you need one or the other. However, in the previous daf on Samech Amud Beis, when the Gemara quotes this Mishnah, Rashi seems to indicate, based on his comments, that it has to be not only open to Rishus HaRabim, but you have to have the key. You have to have, it has to be locked. So you need both to fulfill the requirement of this Mishnah, which seems a little strange, because based on the flow of the Gemara, it seems only need one. So how do you deal with this? So Tosos talks about it and says that there's two different versions of Rashi. There's Rashi on the Mishnah and Rashi on the Gemara, and he tries to explain it differently. The easiest way, I think, to understand the Rashi is based on the way that the Bach amends it. The Bach simply says that what Rashi was trying to teach us here in the second Mishnah is that you can have a situation where it's not open to the public domain and therefore you need a key, or it's open to the public domain and then you don't need a key. And that's kind of how I was trying to explain it. So that's the Mishnah. Again, right now the Mishnah doesn't talk about keys and locking the wine. That's going to come up later, but we need to mention it now since Rashi already alludes to it, plus it factors into the conversation. So, again, just to quickly recap, the first Mishnah has a machlokas between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon, that you make the wine and you leave it in the idolater's home. We assume that the idolater didn't touch it? Said, there's two requirements. Requirement number one is that the wine, the vat, is connected to there's a door that's open to the public domain, and the vat of wine is there. Plus, Jews walk by that area. There are Jews in over the Kacham who live in the area. If you don't have those two, then at least you have to have a shomer who's there all the time. Yotzei v'nichnas. Rav Shimon ben Elazar argues whether he's being machmir or mermekel. We'll have to see that for later. And then case number two is if you are making the wine and you're leaving it in that idolater's home, and he writes that he's accepted the money, even though he didn't really accept the money, but he's just simply saying, you can take it from my home whenever you want. That's the idea, because you've technically paid for it. So therefore, he is not so makbid on the wine. We're not concerned that he's going to touch it. But if he's makbid, then you cannot touch it until you actually pay him the money. And if you try to take it out, we're going to assume that it is Yayin Ezach.